Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Theatrical Mustang Podcast. I'm your host, Katie Woodzik. This is episode 28 with Tootsie Spangles, and we talk about Burlesque and the Libertinis and their upcoming show of Atomic Falls, USA, which runs July 24th through August 1st at the Ballard Underground. It's going to be a fantastic show. And to get more info and to buy tickets, you're going to want to go to thelibertinis.com. This episode is sponsored by KLMXYZ Creative Communications. For all of your marketing and graphic design needs, go to klmxyz.com. Catherine Lynn Morgan is awesome. And also, mark your calendars for the second annual Queer Pride Parade on Whidbey Island. That's happening August 2nd. And to get more info on that, you're going to want to visit queerparade.com. And now, without any further ado, please enjoy episode 28 with Tootsie Spangles. All right, I'm very excited to welcome Tootsie Spangles to the podcast. Welcome, Tootsie.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Now, Tootsie is a stage name.
Yes.
Of yours. Your real name, given name, is Bethany Highstead.
It is, yes.
So, where did Tootsie come from?
Tootsie was born in West Hall at Century Ballroom.
Oh, fantastic.
I was taking Miss Indigo Blue's Academy of Burlesque 101 class.
I still want to take that class. It's on my bucket list.
You should. It was super, super fun. And we, throughout the class, you develop this persona, and part of that persona is giving yourself a name. And I was talking to my best friend, Caitlin, and my sister, and we were just throwing words out, just kind of word salad, and Tootsie Spangles happened. And I was like, oh, that feels right. That feels good.
It feels good.
It's a little, it's fun to say. It's a little, like, patriotic. It's kind of gross.
It reminds me of gold, like gold and copper glitter somehow.
Yes.
When I hear it in my head. So let's talk a little bit about you as a performer, like how you got into performing. You were saying before we started recording, the first show you could remember is when you were 8.
Yeah, I did Odyssey of the Mind. Is that still a thing?
Oh my God, yeah, because we're both from the, or you were in the mid, it was a thing when I grew up in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Like you would... I don't think I was ever quite savvy enough to be selected for it or decided not to do it.
I went to a really small school, so I think they had to beg kids to do it. So, like, I got in.
Okay, so Odyssey of the Mind,
Odyssey
you're 8 years
mind.
Old.
8 years old, did a play, and I was like, oh, this is really fun. But my school did not have a theater program. So then I was kind of pushed to the wayside. I played basketball and softball and did all that stuff. And then in high school, my high school had a really good theater program. And so I auditioned for my first show, which was A Christmas Carol, and I did not get in. But everybody and their mom got in. Like, it was like a cast of 45 people, and there's only like 20 people in the drama department. But
and you didn't get in.
I did not get it. I did props, though. It was
so you were adjacent to the action.
Yeah, absolutely, which was really fun. And then just kept auditioning and started doing a lot of shows and eventually auditioned for a spot in a college program and went to school for it.
So you have a BFA in acting.
Yep.
You went to Roosevelt University?
Roosevelt University's Theater Conservatory.
Theater Conservatory.
In Chicago.
It reminds me of John Lovitz's character on Saturday Night Live who just goes, acting!
Acting, yes.
Throws his arm up in the air. What were some of the highlights from that? I mean, like, what was your swan song of a role in college?
Ooh, one of my favorite shows was a devised show. All the sophomores do a big circus and clowning unit.
Okay.
And we developed a circus show, and we had a ton of clowning performances in that. It was called Mercury Rising. It was a circus that had all the music of Queen.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
What was that process? Because I went to a college that did a lot of devised work. It was a theater and dance mm-hmm. program, and so we would do some devised pieces as well. But what was that process like?
It was basically bringing in a lot of Queen and dancing and goofing off and crying and doing
and then
tricks. Yeah. And then
stuck.
Yeah, just eventually just building the show. And yeah, that was really fun. I also got to be in God's Country, which was... Have you read that?
Who's that by?
Stephen Dietz.
Oh, right, yes.
Yeah, it's a kind of intense, it's not a fun play to see. It's a, you know, it's about white supremacy in the Northwest.
Oh, fantastic.
That was definitely, that was a really wonderful experience, though, to be able to do that kind of work. And
So early on, did you find yourself drawn more to comedies or musical theater or drama, or what was the place where you're like, yes, this is my wheelhouse?
I definitely did a lot of comedy for sure. But I like doing all of it. I have a lot of fun.
Sort of a renaissance woman.
Yeah. Well, sure. Let's call me that.
And so then what was the trajectory from graduating there to being in Seattle?
So after graduating, I just decided I needed a change. I needed to go somewhere else. So my sister lives here. So I was like, okay. Oh my gosh. That was
percussion. We're going to have some random percussion in the background just to keep our listeners on their toes.
Just to keep my hands to myself. I moved out. My sister was out here, and so I moved out here, and I only lived here for a couple of months. I did a few plays and then was hired by the Missoula Children's Theater.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. And so I went on tour with them for a year and played on M and the Scarecrow and an hour-long children's musical version of The Wizard of Oz.
I did. So I don't know if you've heard of Prairie Fire Children's Theater. Isn't that a trip to, like, go to a different town each week?
Yeah.
And for some of the kids, it's the only theater they get the entire year.
Oh, absolutely.
And, like, the power of that.
Yeah, that was probably one of the coolest things is you would come into towns and they have no arts programs and they have been waiting all year and you get to do these shows with them and it was really awesome. Most of the weeks were pretty good. We had some that were...
What was the biggest cast that you had to deal with?
We mostly maxed out our cast almost every single week, which I think the most we could have cast was 64.
Wow.
So it's two people. And then one person sort of directs all the leads in the show and then acts alongside. And then the other person directs all the chorus members in the show. And yeah, it was nuts. It's a good job I didn't really have any roots down in Seattle and I wasn't dating anyone. I didn't have a job. And I was like, yeah, why not? Let's drive around the country. And actually, Woody Shticks, Noah Duffy, who's in the Libertines with me, I met him doing a Missoula tour.
Oh my gosh. Were you on the same tour or was he in another tour?
He was in another tour. And so we would just meet back during breaks in Missoula.
Sure.
And then, I don't know, I'm sure if working in children's theater, nobody parties harder than actors coming back from doing a year of solid children's theater.
I don't know, because I just did a summer tour right after I graduated, but I remember the training that we had, at least the way that Prairie Fire did it, it was, you know, they had bought a couple houses in Minnesota, and for the new people, you had to teach one of the dance numbers to all the actors, and the other actors behaved as the worst children you could possibly imagine. Like, taking out knives, like, locking you outside.
Oh, my God.
And it's like, if you can survive that, you can deal with almost any kind of person. Like, actors trying to behave as bad children.
I could, that's some really intense
training. I'm guessing that Missoula was a little classier than that.
No. there were some nights in Missoula where, yeah. But that's how I met Noah, and we became really good friends.
Okay, so you guys meet, and then do you head back to Seattle after the tour?
I was going to move back to Seattle, because I feel like I hadn't really given Seattle, like, an actual chance.
Right.
And he was going back to finish his degree at Cornish. So I was like, great, I don't have any friends there.
Be
my friend in Seattle. It's really hard to meet people. So he came back, and yeah, we became really good friends.
And so what year is this when you're coming back?
Ooh, 2011.
Okay.
Let's say that.
All right. 2011,
yeah.
And so what, is it around that time that you take the Burlesque 101, or?
Yeah, I missed the sign-ups for a clowning class at Freehold, and I was like, oh, I don't know how really make adult friends without, like, taking classes or doing that kind of thing.
You need to find your tribe.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I was just Googling all these different performing classes, and I came across the Academy of Burlesque website. I was like, oh, I've seen a burlesque show. That was a lot of fun.
Right.
Sure, I'll do that. I bet I'll meet some really cool people, and I end up meeting some really awesome people and having a great time, and pretty much changed the entire trajectory of my performance career.
That's amazing. I took a class at Freehold, the solo performance class that was taught by Mark Kinnison,
yes,
aka Waxy Moon.
Oh my goodness.
And it was a sort of similar thing where he had this background in, you know, dance and acting, and he took Burlesque 101 and it completely changed the paradigm of what he wanted to do as an artist.
Absolutely.
Can you talk about what was that moment for you?
Yeah. Going into the class and I mean, you're really uncomfortable. I mean, I was really uncomfortable the whole time and very out of my element, but I had taken a lot of clowning classes and a lot of physical theater classes. I was like, oh, well, they're very similar in a lot of different ways. And it's like, wow, this is my way to kind of like be a clown on stage, because Seattle doesn't really have a very big clowning community.
Right.
So I was like, great, well, this is my chance to kind of dive into this world. And I was meeting some wonderful, amazing humans in the burlesque world. And just doing that first act that we created in the class, you create a 3 to 5 minute burlesque act. And that first act, after I did it, I was like, oh my, this is a thing that I will definitely want to keep doing.
What was the act that you did?
It's called American Picnic, and I've taken it to several festivals around the country. It's so super stupid. So it's kind of my idea of like how I'm not really what would be considered like the all-American girl and what the all-American girl looks like.
Okay.
So coming on, you know, out with my little big old picnic baskets, and there's American flags shooting out all over the place, and, you know, wearing sort of 1950s picnic sort of garb. And
okay.
Coming out to the Star Spangled Banner and dancing and pulling out like this giant hot dog. It was like, which I completely cannibalized from a pet costume. It's like,
oh my God,
4 feet long.
Okay.
You know, I'm trying to eat the hot dog and I can't get it in my mouth. So, you know, eventually when I open my mouth wider, my blouse pops open.
That's amazing.
Like super embarrassing, and like trying to put my boobs back in. I'm like, oh my God, this is what America is though. It's like eating this hot dog and waving the flag, and I don't want to eat that. And then I, you know, find some Jello in the picnic basket and wiggle it and see that, you know, my parts jiggle, and it's this whole, like, you know.
Yeah, like, I'm going to do some more jiggling.
Yeah, my parts are jiggling. This is jiggling. Like, this is, yeah. And then it gets pretty raunchy, which I don't know if I can.
Oh, yeah, there's no contact restrictions. I mean, go for it. You know.
I mean, at the very end, there's a lot of shimmying and shaking, and it's super clowny and pretty ridiculous. And then at the very end, in the red, white, and blue fringe panties, I have a hot dog bun that I stick on my crotch and then open it and put a big hot dog on my crotch and then wave the flag and tassel twirl.
That's amazing. And so how, I mean, what was sort of the makeup of the class? Was it, I mean, a lot of different performers or people who just, this was something that was on their bucket list?
It was all across the board. There were, I met Hattie Hellcat in that class. She was in my 101 class. And she has been performing forever and has a degree in it and is a clown. And there's people that have never performed before and, you know, they just wanted to try it out. It was on their bucket list.
Right.
People that were just feeling kind of, you know, there's a lot of people that are like, feel not great about themselves, and they sort of use this burlesque class as a sort of healing journey, which was awesome. And
I mean, from what I read, and I'm sort of trying to get the courage to do it, and when you're a performer, like, the scheduling piece is mm-hmm. another thing, but it's a lot about empowerment, mm-hmm. right?
For sure. There's definitely a huge element of this sort of, you know, taking ownership of your own body and your sexuality, and especially from, like, a culture that profits so much on, especially women hating themselves, to get up there and to, like, you know, this is not for you, this is at you, and this is for me, is kind of a huge act of rebellion. And there's something very satisfying about that.
I just got shivers. It's good. Yeah, that rebellion piece. I like that. Yes! I'm going to bump that up on the bucket list, I think.
Yes, absolutely.
So how soon after taking that class did the idea of the Libertinis start for you? Were there seeds sort of planted when you were meeting people in the class? You'd already met Noah, you met Hattie.
Yeah. It has always been my dream to, like, start my own theater company eventually. I just didn't know when that would be or if I would find the right people to do that with. And then after taking the burlesque class, I knew for sure that I wanted to keep performing. So I started getting in touch with producers and started booking myself out. But I knew that I wanted to have a group of people to really create stuff with. And so the Libertinis did start out with more of a sort of burlesque mission that has completely morphed and changed. But the group started out much larger. There was about 7 of us. And we put on our first show, I would say by the skin of our teeth. Which a lot of people, when they're producing for the first time,
right.
It's can be a little hairy.
Trial by fire. Yeah,
absolutely. And we put on our first show. And
what was that first show?
It was called Dreams and Nightmares.
Tell me about it.
It was basically this person that is having, like, a really bad dream, and these monsters come out from under his bed, and they dance, and It was kind of, you know, a lot of the very similar setup to a lot of like old burlesque shows where there's like an opening number and there's a host that kind of weaves a narrative between all the individual acts and a closing number. And
then after that first show, were you like, oh my God, I'm never going to do this again? Or were you like, I learned a lot.
Well, yeah, I learned a lot for sure. I kept booking myself out as a solo artist a lot. So I started performing in a lot of different shows around town. And then as far as producing, it was definitely like, okay, I need to definitely learn a lot more in deciding what we wanted to do next. And then just by working with a lot of producers that I was lucky enough to work with a lot of producers I really respect and really knew what they were doing, and being in those productions, just kind of gleaning what I could from them.
Right, by osmosis almost.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, when you work with, like, as an actor, if you're also a director, if you work with incredible directors, you're like, oh my gosh.
The next time I direct, I'm going to be that smart.
Exactly. Completely. So that's, I learned a lot from producing, just going to shows and working with other producers. And eventually the Libertinis morphed into what they are now, which is kind of a genre blending arts collective.
Talk more about that, please.
So the Libertinis were shaking together theater, neo-burlesque, and clown into one deliciously weird cocktail. It's the three of us. There's myself, Titsy Spangles. I'm the artistic director. And then there's Hattie Hellcat, also known as Sarah Jo Kirchner. She is our company manager. And then Woody Sticks, a.k.a. Noah Duffy, is our PR and head of marketing. But we all have our fingers and a lot of different pies, for sure.
And so this is your third season?
This is our third season. Last season, we were really fortunate enough to work with Annex Theater and be a part of their season. So we put in a proposal, and by, I don't know how that happened, but we got picked to be a part of their late night season. And that was an incredible experience. Like, I don't think we have enough time to talk about how much I love Annex and everyone that works there and
well,
all the opportunities.
Let's try to talk about it a little bit.
They were wonderful. They're like, yeah, this show that you're doing, this sounds really weird and we don't really, yeah, let's absolutely, like, bold new work, let's do it. And so we got to hold auditions and cast a bunch of amazing people, and the show was really successful. It's called Gone Wild. And it was,
oh, right.
Yeah, it was about essentially this person who's like a collector of all different animals was hunting for the Libertinis, who were shapeshifters. And so there was a narrative woven between all these different sorts of acts. And it was a really fun show.
So let's get into the nuts and bolts a little bit. When you decide to do a show, are you starting with a concept? Are you starting with a cast? How do you build? Since it is such a unique kind of genre blending kind of thing, mm-hmm. How do you put all those pieces together?
Well, the past, like, few seasons, everybody, the three of us, are each kind of pitching, like our baby. This is the show that we really want to produce. And so we make a lot of pitches to each other and kind of pick and choose what we want to do. And I think for some of us, it works very differently. It's either, like, a place or just a theme or a concept. This year we did a show called Oral Tradition, which is a storytelling show. And that was something that Woody directed, and that is something that he has done a lot, is a lot of solo storytelling performance. And so we developed a show around that. Hattie really wanted to do a Wild West sort of, like, dirty murder show.
Awesome.
And so she pitched us Your Cheatin' Heart.
And that was at the Black Box Space at Seattle Center?
Yeah. And then the show that I pitched was Atomic Falls USA, which is happening in July. And that started off as just a totally different show, and it completely morphed and changed with the idea of people being trapped together and not knowing what was going on in the outside world. It was really interesting to me. So the inspiration for that was more of a place.
Okay, so let's talk about this show more specifically, since it is coming up, mm-hmm. and we want our listeners to come and see it.
Yeah, absolutely.
At the Ballard Underground. And so is this, like, sort of a year ago you're thinking about the concept of it, or?
Yeah, sort of thinking about, okay, next season, we really wanted to ride the waves of success and that Annex gave us. And
right.
They gave us so much, and they were super supportive and wonderful. We're like, okay, we're going to produce three main stage shows and an off-night show, and I pitched Atomic Falls USA, and we're like, okay, great. It's going to be happening in the summer. So we held auditions, and we had amazing people show up, casted the show. And then the first couple of, we're only a couple weeks into rehearsal, but the first couple weeks, it has been a lot of just like world building and character building, which has been a lot of the really fun stuff.
Do you have a script? Did you have a script when you went into auditions?
No. We had some sides that we were generally thinking and some characters. And so, you know, we had people, you know, come in and they did monologues. And then for callbacks, Woody runs them through a dance call. And we did a lot of sort of clowning within the movement call, too.
Okay.
And then we had people come in and bring us characters. And so we're like, great. We, you know, sent them aside and kind of, you know, we want you to create a character that lives in this world and just tell us like a couple of things about the character. And so then they would come in and we kind of improv with them a little bit. And then we read some sides and casted it.
Do you go into the auditions being like, okay, we want six people, three men, three women, or is it more, let's see what comes to us and build the show around that?
We try to have a lot of ideas about what we want, but being open as much as we can, because I think as soon as, at least in my experience, as soon as I say, like, I want three women and I want four men and I want these kind, everything goes out the window. Like, everything completely changes. So I had an idea that we wanted to cast about seven or eight people and then saw what happened.
That's so awesome.
Yeah, we picked these. We have a really funny, really super smart cast.
Tell me about who's in the cast.
Oh, my goodness. So we have, so the other two Libertinis are in the show, Woody Shix and Hedy Hellcat. Marcus Gorman, who is also a playwright. Jackie Miedema, who's also one of our season three associate artists. She works with us a lot, and she's an incredible performer and a really brilliant writer. Lauren Skelton, who is also a burlesque performer, Flirty Sanchez. Connor Kinzer. And Melissa Fenwick. Who am I missing? Jackie Miedema. Melissa. Kiki Penoyer, who just wrote Tap House.
Oh, right. Yeah, yes. I saw that. The Valor. Mm-hmm. Oh, that must be interesting to have see your play go up and then be a performer in that space immediately afterwards.
Yeah, absolutely. What a trip. Yeah, so I haven't worked with probably most of this cast is new people that we haven't worked with before. And so they just came in and completely blew us away at callbacks and like, yes, we must have them.
So what is the rehearsal schedule? I mean, how does this sort of organically get built?
So we work with Max Kirchner is the playwright that we've been working with in the last couple of shows. And so he comes to all our rehearsals and everybody's taking copious notes and we're just asking each other questions and we're playing and we're building this sort of world together. And then the first rehearsal, Max and I and the Libertinis, we chatted very specifically about, okay, this is an outline. These are some character descriptions. We brought them to the cast. The cast brings in a lot of material that they write, and we just kind of build the pieces together and then try to be very not so precious about our work, knowing right. that things are going to constantly morph and change. So how the show like was originally set up and was going to end is totally different even 2 weeks later into the process. People will bring in really creative and brilliant ideas, or we'll get up and we'll kind of improv in scenes a little bit. And we're like, okay, what just happened there was a really interesting relationship. And then let's explore that more. So then the playwright will kind of, you know, go down that direction for a little while. And then we probably have a script about the solid script about 3 weeks before the show.
Okay.
And so then it's run and gun.
Right.
But I think everybody has such ownership that they've been creating the characters. They have such an ownership over the characters and they really know the characters very well. So by the time we put a script in front of it, they're like, all right, I got this. I know what this is. It's mostly just a lot of learning of choreography.
Right. Getting that into the bones.
Yeah, which there's going to be a lot of choreography in the show, a lot of silly dancing.
So what, in terms of costume, set, music, do those components all come in later, or are you sort of locking those down right now, sort of 2 weeks in?
We definitely start locking them in pretty soon. A lot of our sets, just because we're a small company and we're very thrifty, they're pretty small, and now we're doing a lot of our costuming, and we reach out to people and hire other people, but we do a lot of the stuff ourselves. Definitely lighting is a thing that we cannot do, and we don't have that in our house at all, so we hired an incredible lighting designer that we've worked with, Emily Long, several times. So I'm excited to see what she comes up with.
Okay, so if people want to get tickets,
yes.
Which of course they will, the show runs July 24th through August 1st, and they can search for you on Stranger Tickets or visit, is it thelibertinis.com?
Thelibertinis.com.
Okay.
Right, so Atomic Falls is basically, it's about this group of people that in the 1950s, that there's nuclear fallout and they have to take shelter in this bunker and most of them are, like, kind of hormonal teenagers. And basically them trying to, like, keep their sanity, and it's pretty kooky.
I'm all about kooky.
Yeah, there's a dream ballet sequence. Wow. There's a bear that comes to life. It's fun.
So go check that out, definitely. So I saw some pictures on your Facebook that recently you went to Las Vegas.
Yes.
Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I got to go. Somehow I weaseled my way into performing at the Burlesque Hall of Fame.
Wow.
Yeah, which I, like, about 2 years ago, I was approached by these other burlesque performers who were really awesome. And they said, hey, do you want to be in a Gremlins burlesque number for this 80s show?
Oh, my God.
Like, yes, please. I definitely, definitely want to do that. And Lauren Skelton, who is also Flirty Sanchez, was in that number with me. And we had the act filmed, and then we applied to be in the Burlesque Hall of Fame, which is this big weekend event that happens in June to support the Burlesque History Museum. And
wow,
yeah, we were able to perform on Thursday night, and it was my first time going to Vegas as an adult and performing and meeting, like, some of my idols. It was just, it was insane.
Well, who are some of your idols?
Like, Dirty Martini.
Yes.
Got to meet her, and I don't know what I said, but I was probably...
How would you?
Oh, my gosh, Dirty Martini. Gosh, it was a really awesome weekend. It was definitely went by kind of in a blur. My favorite part of the weekend, besides performing, that was incredible and scary. I got to see every Friday they have the Titans of Tees, which is all the legends, a lot of the legends of burlesque. So burlesque performers from the 40s, 50s, 60s, and 70s performing on stage and completely kicking ass. And I mean, the entire night is like completely emotional, and you're just like awed. Like when you see these 83-year-old strippers just getting up on there and performing the shit out of this huge Las Vegas stage, and you know, the MC was world famous Bob, who was also very awesome, you know, I think put it in words better than I ever could, saying, like, these men and women are really redefining what it means to age in our culture. And it's like, absolutely.
Yeah.
I want to be up there. Like, I want to be 83 years old and be, you know, humping a curtain and telling jokes and singing silly songs. And yeah, it was really inspiring and very awesome.
Can you talk a little bit about, just because I feel like I know the personality types a little bit of different genres of performers, but what is the, like, in terms of burlesque performers, do they tend to be extroverted people, or is this sort of a persona that they get to, I mean, can you talk a little bit about the personality behind a burlesque performer?
Yeah, well, some people, they're sort of burlesque, whatever their names are, as either, like, a separate, completely different character from who they are, and
right.
They kind of live out this whole other character. And for some people, it's just like a different, you know, a persona, just like a heightened version of themselves, which is what I would say Tootsie is, a heightened version of myself. At least I can speak to the burlesque community in Seattle, very awesome, very, I would say, outspoken, feminist, progressive, supportive. We're lucky. We have a really super smart, very kind, burlesque community here in Seattle. A lot of, female producers, and they produce really good work and treat their cast really kind. And yeah. Right. And so, like, in Vegas, I think I was a little bit more nervous about, you know, being in a room with so many, 'cause there are, like, a lot of, you know, big personalities, and everyone, sure. I think everyone was a little bit like, oh, kind of feeling the same way, like, am I gonna, you know, sort of
be at the lunch table?
Exactly. And everyone, I mean, yeah, we had a great time. Everyone was just happy to be there, and at least in my experience, I had a great time in Vegas.
Oh, that's great. So what goes into when you're building a solo act?
Mm-hmm.
How many of those do you sort of have in your back pocket at a time? What goes into the concept for one?
For solo acts, it'll just be like an idea that I had an idea to build an act based off this Looney Tunes episode called Bugs Bonnets, where Bugs Bunny changes, Elmer Fudd is chasing him, and they have their hats keep falling on them, and they change personalities. So it's like, great, I'm going to develop a clown act that is kind of in the same wheelhouse of, you know, different props and hats and how, you know, the music changes and personality changes and it kind of takes over my body.
Yeah.
So that was like a pretty clear idea that I had. I was like, okay, it's just finding the music and spending a lot of time, like, you know, every time I took off a hat, the music had to change and timing that. Sometimes it's just a piece of music that I really love and eventually will find the sort of story or the movement that accompanies it. But I think, I feel like every burlesque performer probably has a notebook or a file on their computer with 1,000 ideas that right. eventually, you know, like, okay, this is it. This is what I'm going to do. And it's a lot of time, like, building these acts and the costuming and the choreography. And
so you draw inspiration from cartoons.
Where else
do you find inspiration?
Let's see. I mean, a lot of it was just is music, cartoons, different shows. I have a duet act that I do with Hattie Hellcat. We perform a lot as duet partners called the Berenstone Bears, which that is completely, the inspiration for that was just like smoking a joint with my little brother and watching The Jungle Book and being like, oh my gosh, I have an idea for like singing bears that, so our first act was us, these two circus bears that ran away from the circus or were kicked out of the circus because one of them killed their trainer and now we're playing regional airports. And so we have like an instrumental version of the Bear Necessities, and we're working on a bunch of different other acts. And
that's amazing.
We go down and confuse tourists at the Pink Door a lot, which if you've never seen burlesque in Seattle, you should definitely check out every Saturday night. The Pink Door at 11 has a burlesque show. That's really awesome.
Where else around town can people see burlesque?
Ooh, if you check out, like, if you Google, like, the Emerald City Burlesque Calendar, they'll have, like, all the shows that are going around town. There's Facebook groups, Seattle Burlesque and Cabaret. They'll list all the shows. There are lots of, I mean, there's shows going on almost, I would say, almost every single weekend.
It's amazing!
And it ranges from, you know, like, the Pink Door, which you'll get to see a lot of different variety. You'll see aerialists and singers and breakdancers, clowns, strippers, and that happens every week. I know down at Annex tonight, they're doing a Harry Potter burlesque show.
What?
So there's Nerdlesque, which is a whole nother genre of burlesque that's really popular right now. And
oh, I saw on Red, I like jump around all the time. I'm not the queen of like the most smooth segues, but I saw on your Facebook, a Saturday Night Live burlesque show. Oh my god!
I'm hosting a Saturday Night Live burlesque show called Live from Studio G String, which is happening July 10th and 11th at Theater Off Jackson.
God, who came up with it? I'm like already so frustrated because I have a show opening that same weekend, so I can't come. But who came up with this idea?
There's a company called Smooches and Science, and they're two lovely producers. And I just got an email from them out of the blue, being like, "Do you want to host? Yes, I want to host. Do I want to live out my Saturday Night Live fantasies? Yes, I do."
And so, what does that entail? You hosting the evening?
This is a little bit different for me. I don't host outside the Libertinis, we're doing sort of variety shows very often. But for this, I'm writing an opening monologue.
Like, similar to one that would be on Saturday Night Live?
Absolutely.
Okay.
So I'm going out there and I'm writing a monologue. And I'm also going to be probably making an appearance in a couple other acts. And I get to write some characters for Weekend Update, which I'm really excited about. So, just throwing out different ideas, just like...
Do you know what the lineup is? I mean, what characters are going to be featured?
I know Mango is going to be there.
Of course.
Mary Catherine Gallagher, the Spartan cheerleader. I mean, there's a whole lot. Prince is the musical host. If you've ever seen I Have a Handful perform, she's a burlesque performer around town. She's one of my favorite people. She does a Prince impersonation that is mind-blowing. It's so good. And she's just like a delightful human.
So where can people find more information and get tickets?
They can check out tootsiespangles.com. I'll have all my shows listed there too, and they can get tickets. And
we'll have that link in the episode description.
Yeah, I'm very excited about that show. It should be super fun.
I like to ask my guests what advice they have for people who might be interested in working in their genre. So for someone who thinks, well, maybe I kind of might be good at burlesque, what should they do? What's your advice to them?
Go for it. See shows. For me, it's really hard for me to like speak up to people and introduce myself. But if you can, go see shows if you want to work with a specific company or work with a certain person. I've had people come and see, like, Libertini shows and say, like, that was really great. Can I work with you? Like, yes, absolutely. I want to work with people who are excited about it and seem, you know,
nice. And that's something, and, I mean, yeah. It seems like something social media would be great for, because a lot of entertainers have, you know, their persona on Twitter or a Facebook page or whatever, and so that might be...
Absolutely. I would say stuff gets lost in translation a lot on social media, and I tend to remember good people call. More if they will come and see a show, or, you know, if you really want to, like, hey, I think I might be good at that. Take a class. They have teaser classes. Teaser classes. For at the Academy a lot. Cherry Manhattan also teaches a burlesque for actors class as well.
Sorry. I'm like, I want to take that class.
Yeah, so there's people that take Cherry Manhattan's class, and I know a lot of burlesque performers are also the teachers as well. And, if you start by seeing what they're kind of like, introducing yourself to producers, to people afterwards. And then I would kind of follow up on social media or emailing or, yeah.
Right on.
I think Facebook messaging is also some of the worst way to get in touch with people.
Oh, interesting.
I think so sometimes. I've gotten messages like, oh my gosh, I didn't know that somebody sent me this. You know, things get lost a lot of the times. Like, Facebook can be the worst. It's the, you know.
It's the best and the worst.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's talk about costuming. Costuming for burlesque. So you're devising a concept for a piece. Mm-hmm. Do you have a costume designer or designers you work with? Do you build costumes yourself?
I build costumes myself. I have a dream and a glue gun and a little studio in my basement. I'll definitely ask for help if I need. I'm not a great sewer. A lot of it will be calling my mom and being like, how do you thread the bobbin again? Like, every time. You think I would remember. I've definitely learned a lot of costuming trial by error, and there's an educational summit or convention called BurleyCon, which is a burlesque educational convention that happens once a year. And I've learned a lot of tricks and
where does that happen?
That happens in one of the convention. I think it was down at the Doubletree the last few years. I don't know where it's going to be this year, but it happens in November, and it's a chance for all the burlesque artists to converge on this convention center for 4 days and essentially take classes from each other and really hone your skills. And that's awesome. If you're a burlesque performer and you haven't been to BurleyCon, you should definitely go to BurleyCon.
What have been sort of your top costumes, like your favorite costumes from all the acts that you've done? Is there one that comes to mind where you're like, that one, that would go in the Smithsonian once I get there? Or...
Oh my goodness. So many. Oh, I have a pair of whoopee cushion pasties that I really love.
God.
And then a rubber chicken shimmy belt, which I'm like really happy. I feel like the most happy about that. Actually, a lot of, like, I've made some, you know, like, pretty beautiful, some decent costumes. But my favorite ones, like the one I have the most fun in, are things that I've actually taken from thrift stores or that I've had and I've altered them. And I have this act where it's essentially a tribute act to Joan Cusack's character in 16 Candles, the one where she wears, like, the neck brace.
Yes.
So I have an act where I'm essentially her wearing the neck brace and, like, the sweater that has the little skirt on it. Oh my and God. It's really a tragic outfit. But I feel like I have the most fun in that outfit, and that is, like, one of the most fun acts to do. And it's probably the least sexy costume that I have.
But it's memorable. It sort of makes that mark.
Absolutely.
What is on your bucket list? Like, do you think you'll get back to more traditional theater? Is that ever draw you, or what is on the horizon for you?
I would like to go on, I think the Libertini is going on tour, touring some fringe festivals. Some of our shows, I mean, I would say they're more towards traditional theater and less from burlesque in a lot of ways.
Sure.
Their original work, so it's how we get there, is definitely a little bit different. I would like to start doing more storytelling solo performance works. That's going to be a personal goal for me. I would love to perform at Burlesque Hall of Fame again.
Yes.
That's definitely a goal, maybe on the competition night. Yeah.
So what's the competition night like?
The competition, it's like a 5-hour show.
Oh my God.
And, people apply to be in there, and they have you know, best large group, best small group, King of Boylesque, Miss Exotic World. I mean, it's, yeah, you see some really, really incredible performers that are like, oh my gosh, I will never be that good. And, you know, that make you really frustrated. But at the same time, you're like, I want to leave the theater and go home and like rehearse right now. Which is like a good, I love seeing like any sort of theater that you're just like, you're so happy, but you're kind of like full of rage at the same time.
Right.
So you're just like, oh, why didn't I think of that? Or this is so good. I'm just like clenching my fist. But I want to do something about it afterwards.
So tours maybe on the horizon.
Tours on the horizon. More playing in solo performance in different genres. More storytelling. And eventually I will probably start auditioning for around town again. But it's hard to, I mean, it's really hard to find time to do that.
Well, you seem like you're just thriving, doing your own thing.
I'm having a really good time doing that. And that was part of the reason, too, why I started doing this, is the thought of, like, when I moved back to Seattle, like, okay, I'm going to get new headshots, go through my audition book, get that all whipped into shape again, and I, like, just couldn't do it. I was like, I'm not ready to jump back in. So
there's sort of a lesson there, I think, in creating your own opportunities for yourself as a performer.
Yeah. Well, I mean, no, there definitely is, for sure. I think it's good to go out and to audition a lot and to not get cast and to really, you know, really what it feels like to just put the work in and to kind of struggle with that and deal with rejection. And I mean, I think that's like an important part of like being an artist as well.
Absolutely.
But
sort of, you know, it doesn't kill you, makes you stronger, and yeah, it gives you, sure, gives you a keener sense of what you do want to be doing.
Yeah. And I think, like, always taking classes and always finding new ways to be a better artist, I think, is really important. Pushing outside your comfort zone, I think, is also another really important thing. And for me, that was taking, like, a burlesque class that completely, ooh, took me down another path. And I'm super happy that I did, because now I get to, you know, make art with these other two weirdos who I absolutely love and adore. And you know, we get to mash our love of burlesque and clowning and sketch comedy and theater and make these shows that I think are pretty special and unique.
I'm just like, I'm getting emotional.
I know. I'm trying not to be like weird about it, but I'm feeling a little like,
Well, I think it really is a gift when you find not only your tribe of performers in general, like in terms of a genre or whatever, but those, you know, one or two special artistic collaborators who challenge you to be your better self, where you can be completely transparent with them without agenda.
Yes.
And it's just about creating the work. It's all about the work and artistic expression, and not about, you know, I get something from you and you know what I mean? It's just sort of a purity.
Yeah. It's, I feel incredibly lucky to be able to have found like Woody and Hattie, and to be able to create work together and being like, okay, yeah, we're going to do this, and really pushing each other. And, you know, like when Woody proposed a completely storytelling show, I was like, ah, that's really your wheelhouse. I would love to, but I don't know about this. And then, you know, he really pushed us, and I think we created some really wonderful pieces, and it was received really well. And I'm like, yes, let's do that again. Let's take it on tour. So I think it's really nice to work with people who share your same vision, but will also push the group in new and exciting ways. So hopefully we'll keep doing that.
Thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Well, thank you for having me.
And so you're going to want to visit thelibertinis.com. You're going to want to visit Tootsie Spangles. Tootsie. It's in it wrong. Damn it.
I know. It's totally
Tootsiespangles.com. We'll have both of those websites in the episode description. And this has been wonderful. Thank you again.
Gosh. Thank you.